Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Books Boys, live from the Grand Library, the Dean and PJ.
Guys, keep calm and read your tickets.
PJ, we're using the Anna Karenina method here.
He's PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean, and we are the Books Boys.
The one and only.
This is the Books Boys show. Get it? Buy it? Books.
Now, books.
Two important things to note. PJ is doing his laundry.
I am doing my laundry because, I'll tell you why. Because why not do a bit of laundry while you're doing a nice radio show or listening to the radio show? Because I'm just going to show this exclusive content. You have to pay a lot on Patreon to watch this, but there is my laundry pile, Dean.
Oh, wow. It's, PJ, you're gonna get me too excited now. You got to be careful with that pile.
Well, I'm just saying, if you want to pay for that kind of content, lads and lassies,
Do I have to pay to see this?
Mucho dinero. Well, I mean, we can talk about that check afterwards that you're going to send me over. Just saying. Exclusive content, everyone.
And the second thing we should note is we are currently lacking Alfred. He's taken some time off. It's springtime. We just had St. Patrick's Day. We're coming up towards Easter. He's just taking a little extended vacation.
Well, after that contribution he did last month, which was basically saying not a single word, he must be very exhausted.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, I really hope that the listeners will forgive us. I hope that the show is still enjoyable without him. You know, I know that he's a vital part, you know.
He's vital. That's a key word. Anyway, okay, books, well, Dean. What's it all about? You know what I mean? I know we've been asking this a few times. Any answers from the internet or the tinternet, as my stepmom would say.
Well, not on the interwebs, but we got some carrier pigeons, and they all brought me some paper. But I was confused. I thought that the paper was the book, but it turned out it was just a little scrap of parchment with some scribbles on it. So it wasn't very helpful. Well, unrelated, actually.
Perhaps all these. All these plays and poems, they can be found in bottles in the middle of the ocean. I hear they put stories into them, right? Or letters.
I heard a song about a message in a bottle. How much paper is required for it to be a book? You know, that's what we don't know.
How many trees? It's a mystery. How many trees?
It's a mystery.
Isn't it a bit shocking now, to be honest? Like, they say it's made out of trees. And it is a bit of a strange thought, isn't it? That you are... Not to get macabre here, but it's just a bit of food for thought. You are basically holding a tree that's passed away. I mean, have you ever thought about that?
I'm holding four. So,
well, it's a straight thought. I'm just saying, like, from what kind of trees?
Yeah, I know it is kind of slightly sobering.
And no, I'm just saying, like, we're putting stories in, on trees. I mean, it's kind of a beautiful thought too. Mm. Which makes me happy because I'm going to mention the book in a second, but one of the books I read actually talks a bit about that he purposely found an association where his books are basically printed on, what's it called? Basically, not organic trees, but forests that are controlled, controlled forests where they're regrown almost immediately. So sustainable forests, that's the word. So he does print his books on sustainable paper.
Ah, good.
Yeah. Well, it's not something people think about, right? They just think about recycling. So, I mean, it's just something to think about, guys. Think about the trees outside when you're reading that book as well. How can you help the trees? Anyway, that's just a little food for thought.
Oh, PJ, before we get into our books, what's the news with you?
Well, I've been. Oh well, I was just saying there to Dean, I have been busy since we last talked. Pretty much at the same time I started, just afterwards, started writing a children's book, and I'm gonna keep it a bit of mystery what it's about, but it's about a small animal, although he's usually big. So
Okay.
that's all I'm saying right now, and what the implications are. He's shunned from society because he's not as big as he should be, not as great
I
as he
know
should
the
be,
feeling.
not strong. Oh, there you go. And also about, well, the interaction between
Jest.
humans and animals. So I just finished that book at the weekend, actually, so I'm really happy about that because it's
Good.
been a while since I did some writing, you know.
Yeah. Congratulations, good sir.
Well, cheers, thanks. I mean, that's why I was reading a lot of children books, not to get the ideas, but just to get into the vibe of like how to write more kind of concise writing, a lesson down. I'm really interested at the moment at editing down
So
and
your
getting
children's
like,
books do not follow the Anna Karenina method, is that what you're saying?
I'm afraid I'm going a bit against the Anna Karenina method. So I'm very sorry, Mr. Tolstoy, but I'm more interested in what is the story of Anna Karenina. Can I read Anna Karenina in 2 pages? This is what I'd be interested
Yeah. Well, what have I been doing? I've been to London. I went with Playboy Alex and Dark Place Robert. We went to London. We went to Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, and we saw
Nice.
Titus Andronicus performed. It was
Oh.
absolutely fantastic. It was an all-female cast. They
What?
added some songs in, they added some jokes in, but they still kept the original script perfectly.
Hold on a second. I thought I haven't read it, but I thought it's supposed to be one of the most violent plays.
It's
I mean, are
very
there any
violent.
jokes or anything like that in the
So
original order?
they didn't add jokes. They made a few of the lines that were already
They just changed
there
it.
in a funny
Yeah.
way, just
Sure.
to give you a little break from the mass murders that you're seeing, essentially.
Right,
But they did it
no.
perfectly. If anything, I think it was an improvement.
Wow.
And I
Wow, okay.
reread the play, and then we did a quick bonus episode of Playboys where we talked about the show we went to see. So that's on our Patreon as
That's
well.
pretty sweet, yeah. It's great that you had the experience. And I believe it's our mutual friend Alex's favorite Shakespeare play, or one of his favorite Shakespeare plays, is it?
It's up there, and I think it went even higher after watching this performance.
And what a great treat anyway to see that one.
And what else have I
Wow.
done? I've been working on my Mexican dance, and I performed in the Europa Hotel in Belfast for the Culture Shock night.
That's pretty
And
cool.
I did a Veracruz, a polka, and a mambo. So that was fun.
So we can see. I mean, we basically pay money to see dance now. That's the new thing. So if you want to see one book boy dance,
That's it, yeah.
In Belfast,
And then
wow,
I
that's
was
pretty cool,
also
dude.
in a St. Patrick's parade in Newry, so I've been busy.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah, and I heard that they had one of our favorite Father Ted songs playing
Yes,
on
we went afterwards
it.
to a bar, and they had My Lovely Horse, which I think we've played our
Oh, that
version
is
of on the
classic.
show before, and
We've
Alex
done it a few
was
times.
not amused, but
A bit of backstory. I think we mentioned this back when it happened, but last year, February, when I was in County Clare, our mutual friend Alex and Dean here came to visit me and Elisa. We told the story before, I'm just telling it
I think
again.
so.
And but I got to the habit of bringing a guitar and the rented car we had. I wasn't driving it, thank God. I was just playing by the side. And for some reason, why did we even start with My
You
Lovely,
weren't
Lovely
playing
Horse?
and driving. Let's
Yes,
be
that
clear.
would be a bit too, yeah, that would be a bit too much in the literature scene. But I don't know why we start playing that song. But as soon as we started, we pretty much didn't stop playing for the whole time you were there. And
Yeah.
our mutual friend Alex is, Americano, and I suppose he doesn't have the Father Ted, essence in him. He didn't appreciate it. Let's just
I
put it
think he
that
did
way.
at first, but I think you wore him out.
Well, maybe, all right. I suppose if you think, well, so yeah, I suppose so. Oh.
It
By
was
the
very
way, did you
funny to hear it
know?
performed in a bar.
I think we're going way off topic here. I'm just going to mention. I think they have Father Ted Festival right now in March.
I
I
heard
meant
that
to
they
go
do
there
that, yeah.
because remember I told you last time. I mean, that was February last year. I also said, in March we should go, and we did it, and they
No, I
happened again.
forgot
I just
about it.
someday we'd love to go.
Yeah.
Anyone wants to give us any free tickets, guys? I'm
Yeah.
intrigued.
And I should mention, we're actually recording. I haven't read as much as you're used to because we're recording a week early. And because Alex and I are taking a sojourn to Athens. So we've been
Nice.
reviewing on Playboys on patreon.com/booksboys. We've been reviewing some ancient Greek plays. We're doing some comedies, and we're going to move on to some tragedies from next month. And we just thought, you know, it's time to go to Athens to see where it's all starting. So
see where it's all at, yeah. Why not? Yeah, go back to the origin. Next it'd be Rome. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. I've done Rome before, but I've never been in Athens. I've always wanted to go.
That's pretty sweet.
But look, I see this is why we're missing Alfred and we're getting off topic. We're rambling.
Yeah, we're just getting off topic. It's just a conversation here, lads. But I suppose the ultimate question people are dying to find out. What are the four books you've read? I've read a bit myself.
You got two what there, is the right? First?
I've got two right here, two lovely books. So we got some nice books. Now, first of all, I'm trying to guess four books. So I'm going to guess you read one Dumas that you probably didn't like. Hold on, just going to try. I really don't know. No, because I didn't listen to your message.
Oh, I sent you the one I read. You didn't listen.
No. I did on purpose because I wanted it to be spread. So I'm really guessing now.
So I haven't done Dumas. I do have.
No. Okay. I haven't read. No, hold on a second. Let the listeners guess. So guess now and dial 1780 to get a special prize. Mm-hmm. A special prize if you can get the right answer.
Press 1 for Dumas, press 2 for Balzac.
So wait a second. I'm going to go with a Dumas sequel that made no sense whatsoever and you couldn't categorize because the translation was so bad of the title that you're not sure in what pentalogy or sextology it belongs to.
Okay.
Now that's... Hold on a second.
That's believable.
My second guess is that you either got... You're into... Hold on a second. We're talking about Dickens, but we're staying Victorian now. I believe you might have stayed Victorian. Something Victorian. Now, any guess, guys? Let's go for a Thackeray. Let's go for William Thackeray, not Vanity Fair. You probably read a lesser book. This is my guess. Okay. Third of all, I'm going to guess that you might have gone Spanish at some points, knowing you. Because you have a tendency going Spanish. You know, if you sit still for long enough, you turn Spanish. Start dancing Spanish. You've been dancing Spanish now.
Yeah.
So maybe Egaldos. Egaldos. And the fourth is probably a guilty pleasure. Because you love your once a month guilty pleasures. This is my guess.
Okay. Well, yeah. I will do the reveal. I read a Thackeray.
Oh, hold on a second. Drum roll. You read a Thackeray.
I read a Thackeray. Henry Brilliant. Esmond, which I'll talk about in just a few Brilliant. Seconds.
Brilliant. So I got that one right. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been trying to return to old friends. Last month I had a Dumas.
Yeah, I had the feeling.
And a Wilkie Collins. I've got a Galdós and a Balzac on the shelf, but I'm not going to do them just yet. Oh. I thought I would go to another old friend, Tolstoy.
Oh, right. I forgot. So we're just talking about it.
The Cossacks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's one of his earlier novels, isn't it?
Yeah. Then I went for an old Spanish friend, but one that we spent an entire episode 5 on.
Oh, my God.
I read some Zafón.
Zafón. Nice. El Palacio de la Medianoche.
Yeah.
Lovely.
And then I read a recommendation from Alex that was totally out of the blue. You would never have guessed this. Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter.
Ah, stop it now. Then you've gone all American on me, have you? I don't think you've ever read
It's the first time I think I've read, other than maybe someone that we've chatted to, it's the first time I've read an American classic on the show.
I mean, American classic. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, let's hear about it. So I'm really, let's go then for Thackeray. So what was this Thackeray like? I mean, people just know him for Vanity Fair. So I also have no idea about his other stuff.
Vanity Fair is a near 1,000-page sprawling book full of 100 characters. It's very hard to follow, but it's a lot of fun. This is a shorter book, okay? It's only about 450 pages. I want to say that it's less fun and less well-structured, but it's still a good book. So it's called Henry Esmond, and it's about, obviously, the titular character himself, a Mr. Henry Esmond. It starts off very Dickens. So Henry Esmond is an orphan. He's living with like some people who are not very kind to him. And he mentions that the relative he's living with, you know, boxes his ears and you know, is very mean to him. And I thought, we're going like Dickens' route. But then almost immediately he says he was taken away from that house by a different relative. And that's the end of the Dickens portion of the novel.
Interesting. Did it seem like almost like a parody of Dickens? Because Thackeray was almost later, like, right?
Yeah, I read it as almost like I'm going beyond Dickens, you know? Like here's what's popular. I'm going to cover it in 20 pages and then we're going to move beyond that, you know?
Right, okay.
So he moves to another relative and then to another relative. So it's very weird. It's a very slow start because he's moving around to these different people's houses. But eventually he settles with a particular family in their kind of manor house, and they've got a son and daughter, and they're quite kind to him. We don't go the Dickens route. These people are actually very kind to him, and he eventually gets on very well with them.
Okay.
But he also falls in... They almost adopt him as their kind of son, but then he falls in love with his stepsister, if you will, Beatrice. So here's Henry, we've got the lord and lady of the house, and we've got Beatrice and little Frank. And he's a kind of older sibling or older cousin type character to them.
Mm.
So there's also the backdrop of this. All these books seem to have this political and religious kind of backdrop. There's Protestant versus Catholic type things happening. There's revolutions going on, you know, political overthrow, kings being overthrown, and all this kind of stuff in the background of it. And there's a Father Holt, and he has a secret entrance to their house where they're just like, he can come and go, but eventually the house kind of gets raided because they've been holding, you know, clandestine religious and political meetings and things like that. I don't really care about that side of it. But interestingly, Father Holt disappears for many years, but later we bump into a royal emissary, a certain Captain Von Holtz, who bears a striking resemblance to Father Holt.
Okay, so he sounds like a character.
He's fun, and he just teaches, you know, whatever. But I suppose what I really want to say, I'm going to try to keep this brief because this book suffers from being too short, actually. It's trying to be as sprawling as Vanity Fair, but it doesn't have half the space, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And the first half is quite good. Once we get past the sort of triple start intro with him moving around, he's getting along with his family. It's all very nice. Then he contracts smallpox.
Right.
So he's a kind fellow. He's in a bar, you know, playing with some kids. One of them's got smallpox, and he brings it home and infects the house, basically.
Right. Okay.
Now, Lady Esmond absolutely worships her husband. She worships the ground he walks on. She thinks that he's just fantastic and amazing. Actually, he's unintelligent, and he's a bit of an alcoholic. Okay?
Right.
He says, okay, smallpox is into the house. I'm off. He disappears, goes to a different town, and gets a mistress. So when he comes back to find his wife altered by the smallpox and is quite cold to her, she immediately loses all the kind of worship that she's had for him. And that family is broken forever from that moment.
Interesting. But hold on a second. So the protagonist, what's his name again? Sorry.
Henry.
Henry, so he brought in the smallpox. So does he start feeling guilty? I mean, not
he does, and she almost throws him out. The lady Esmond, she, you know, she's, you could have killed my children by bringing this in, and she's very, very harsh to him. But she does later recant it, and they do make up. Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Now there's a big twist that comes, but it comes quite early, so it's not really a spoiler as such. It's actually integral to understanding the plot. Father Holt reveals that the title of Lord was given to the wrong branch of the family, and he has some documents to say that Henry, far from being the little foundling sort of orphan boy, he's the real Lord Esmond.
All right, okay.
But he's such a kind chap that he doesn't want to take it away from his sort of stepbrother Frank, who's going to inherit it when his dad dies. And he says, these people have been kind to me, and I will never take the title off them. And he suffers a lot of hardships in the book because he is a kind of orphan. He's a kind of misplaced person, but he just bears them all. You know, this Victorian idea about just bearing the bad luck that you've been given, the ill health, whatever else, and he just bears it, stiff upper lips it, and never tells anyone until near the end.
Right, okay.
But, you know, young Frank is always nice to him anyway. Frank's quite neutral. He makes one or two mistakes because he becomes an adult and goes out and likes the women for a little bit, but he reins himself in pretty quickly. Who we don't like is Beatrice. Henry's in love with Beatrice, but she's the ultimate coquette, you know? And she just goes around flirting with everyone. And she's really not very nice in the end. She's very different from the mother. They always say that the mother is this paragon of virtue, this, you know, saintly woman. She's just so perfect. And even her daughter says, she's too perfect. I could never be like her. So I'm just going to be the opposite almost, you know?
Yeah.
Henry says, this woman is terrible for me and she would ruin my life if I married her, but I feel that she is my fate and I should marry her anyway. So this is like Victorian ideas. Like, why be happy? Like, why do something that you think will bring you happiness when you could just like give yourself eternal grief, right?
Of course. Yeah.
But it turns out she won't marry him because he's not the Lord and he self-sacrifices. And he just says he's not going to give her the title. So he goes off to the military to try to gain some honors for himself there. And he does it all. His whole life's goal is to impress her. And she's not interested. She's going off with other guys. You know, she's not interested in him at all.
Right. Okay.
Because he's too old. And they mention, like, this guy, you're just too ancient. And I think he's something like 36, you know. And they say, like, well, you know, he's done for.
36. 36, right. Well, that's ancient. Yeah.
And she's, it's ridiculous. In fact, that the same thing happens in the next book where the guys are too old and 36. And the girl, I think at one point they actually say that even Beatrice is an old maid now at 25. The other girls in the town think that she's beyond marriage now, that she's hit the ancient age of 25.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know what they say? What, beyond 25, you know, finally goes dark. Hmm.
But what happens is...
That's ridiculous. But I suppose that's a very Victorian... Is he making a point that this is something wrong, Thackeray? I mean,
I'm not even sure if he is.
Or is it just really a Victorian belief?
I think he just was in with it, yeah.
Right, yeah.
But per Henry, so what happens is... I'm going to give one spoiler because it's an important plot point.
After.
The father dies and Frank inherits, right? That was to be expected. But how does the father die? In a duel.
Right.
Because there's a friend who was flirting with his wife and he had to protect the family's honor by killing the guy, but the guy kills him.
All right, okay.
And Henry was a witness. So the wife says to Henry, you brought smallpox into my house and you ruined my marriage and now you've watched my husband die. And she casts him aside and he goes to jail.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty radical.
Yeah. So that happens.
I was like, but you're telling a lot of the story now. I mean, but still.
I'm going to stop there. The only thing I'll say is it does follow the Anna Karenina method. There's a good 60 or 70 pages of military campaigns. You know, Henry went off to impress her by doing military campaigns. Let us tell you all about them. Many, many military campaigns. The only thing interesting about them is that one of them takes place in a raid in Vigo, which is, of course, in Galicia, where I've been many times and where Valerie the Pigeon Detective lives. So it was up here, but they plunder it. So that was not nice.
Oh, that wasn't very nice. Did you recognize even some of the streets, even though?
No, they don't go into much detail, but they just mentioned that they're in Vigo.
You know, I think if you're going to follow the Anna Karenina, if you're going, like, this is what I think, really. I was just saying that I prefer, like, the essence of a story at the moment. I like minimalist at the moment. But if you're going for the Anna Karenina method, I think there's still some art to it. You know, I still like works like Ulysses, where he goes into great geographical detail of Dublin. So, I mean, like, if you're going to do it, I think you might as well just, like, do a bit of research if you're going for that route.
That's fair.
I think it's interesting. But I think that's just lazy if you're just going to more or less kind of... Oh, that's a pity. Because that would have made it more enjoyable, I feel like.
It would have. I would have liked the Vigo stuff. What's interesting, though, is this is a story about everyone being nice to each other more or less, you know? The husband and wife have their problems, but Henry's great. Everyone's nice to him. They see him as this kind old character. The mother pays for his education because she says, well, I want to send you off and get a good education and make something of yourself. He has another old aunt who helps him get into the army. Like, it's not mean people. It's not like Dickens-type people, you know? It's just like, let's all be happy, almost. They've got their problems. They've got the smallpox. They've got the father dying, but they do what they can, you know?
I find it interesting because it's something that's not often talked about at that time, which is kind of like pleasing others and the consequences maybe of always saying yes, isn't it? I mean, you should be saying more no.
There are, of course, some of the usual sexisms, and they mention, you know, a woman, the best thing she can ever do is be asked to pawn her diamonds for her husband. She takes great pleasure in having to do that sacrifice for her husband, which, of course, links us into this month's sponsor. It is, of course, the new hit single, Pawning My Diamonds for My Husband by the band Everyday Normal Women. So you can get that on the jukebox today.
That's a great title, actually. Everyday Normal. Everyday Normal Man. Yeah. Woman Man. Okay, but
they do the usual thing where they move away from their estate because they're all rich, right? They go live somewhere else, and the estate's crumbling, and then they go back to it one day, and all this kind of stuff, you know. But there's a very important hint, and I'm going to just hint at it. The sister always says, "I don't think that Henry's the right person for me because he never made enough of himself." But you know who you really would do well with, Henry, is my mum, your adopted mum, essentially.
What?
So that's I'm going to leave it there.
Interesting.
Okay, Henry like worships the mum, so
he worships her. Yeah, let's just see what way he worships her at the end. Okay, mm-hmm, I see. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see. Okay, interesting. It's getting a bit. It's getting a bit Miss Robinson-esque. I feel like the whole kind of Roger-esque. Okay.
Some of the sexism is bad for me. Like there's a Duke that Beatrice is getting together with at one point, and they're thinking about marrying him, and. You know, Henry gives her some diamonds and all of a sudden she likes him now. And she thinks, oh, maybe I should have picked Henry because he's given me diamonds. You know, that's how fickle she is. And the husband to be is like, you know, no one but me is allowed to give diamonds to my wife, you know. And he takes a great insult and he makes her give them back.
Good Lord.
So there's that controlling, you know, stuff as well.
I'm going to go off topic here, but I'm really enjoying listening to you and just doing the laundry. You know, you know, I'm not really much of a laundry kind of fella. But I've got to say, I kind of see the joy in just, no, honestly, of like folding laundry. There's something very meditative. Just saying that, guys. So I'm feeling like, you know, not like an everyday woman. I'm feeling like, right now, I'm feeling like, I don't know where this is going right now. I don't feel like a woman. I just feel like a man who's enjoying doing
laundry. I don't know what's happening.
I don't know what's going on here. But going off very topic, I want to tell you about the book that I read.
Right.
And I was just saying to Dean, I was reading these two books after I got a bit ill in the stomach, which in a sense kind of forced me to relax. So it wasn't very enjoyable at the beginning, but then I just had to take some time off work and really I just wrote a lot in the end and read and finished the book I was working on. So it was a prolific week. That was just last week. And this book here really relaxed me. It was the kind of children's book I've been looking for, Dean. It's called Das kleine Gespenst, The Little Ghost by Ottfried Preußler. Very Germanic name.
Okay.
Now, Ottfried Preußler, he's not famous anymore. Relatively well-known in Germany in the 60s. And this little book has been turned into a film a few times, but it has been translated into English. I highly recommend it. It's a pity that people seem to have forgotten it. I think people confuse it with Casper. It's got nothing to do with Casper, except that it's a little ghost living in a castle. But it's the kind of book that I was looking for, then, because I've been looking for the kind of like Pippi Longstocking kind of book, like this kind of, you know, this kind of Swedish kind of 40s children's book, which is just about, essentially about not much, about nothing, to quote the old Seinfeld, you know. But I'm looking for these kind of children books that are not really about big adventures or pirates or whatever. Well, Pippi Longstocking has pirates, but I'm saying it feels like she's doing everyday things, or even the Mumu Troll series. They're doing maybe some fantastic things, but there's a lot of kind of depictions of them walking just in nature and stuff like that, or just enjoying the nights, or just talking about friendship. And essentially, this is from that era. This is from the 60s. Das kleine Gespenst, The Little Ghost, follows a, that's the name of the, look, beautiful illustration, look at that.
Nice, yeah.
Beautiful illustrations by
Little Ghost in a rocking chair.
Yeah, I mean.
And in a treasure chest.
Yeah, and he lives in a treasure chest, and it starts off with the phrase, ein harmloses kleines Nachtgespenst, a harmless little night spirit. And he lives in Eulenstein Castle. What he does, he's just a little ghost who just wakes up at midnight and roams around the castle for 1 hour before just falling asleep and lying back in his chest. And he's got a friend. He's got a friend who's an owl. So there he is. Another beautiful illustration. highly recommend this. Just
oh, that one's very nice. That full page illustration.
Yeah, I'm going to make a few photos. It's full of black and white illustrations, but absolutely beautiful.
Mm.
And this is Mr. Uhushuhu. And that's the owl. He's a very wise owl, and he's the little ghost's friend. The little ghost doesn't have a name. And for the little ghost, he's been there for hundreds and hundreds of years in this castle, and he just kind of wants to see the town in daylight. So he always roams around at night, and he has a big wish, and he wants to just wake up one day during the day. But he can't. He tries often. And the secret is, only Mr. Uhushuhu, the owl, knows this, that the town clock, when it strikes at midnight, is the moment the little ghost can waken up.
Ah.
Unless it doesn't strike, and it doesn't strike during the day, it doesn't wake up. But what happens is that one day, the clock strikes at midday instead of midnight. It turns out someone made a slight mistake and tuned the clock again, but instead of doing it at midday,
right.
At midnight, he did midday. It's the same
thing. So the clock goes on at midday instead of midnight. So what does that mean? He gets to wake up during the day then for the first time.
So he wakes up at day, yes. And at first, he's delighted, and he goes outside. But of course, there are people outside, and they do see him. He's a visible ghost. And immediately, the second half of the book is just about him getting away. He escapes down an underground tunnel, gets lost. He only is awake for 1 hour. He falls asleep like on the dot at 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And he's lost and confused. And basically, he's causing havoc all around the town. They're all terrified of him, even though he just kind of just wants to play as an innocent little ghost.
Mm.
And he's got to find his way back to the castle. He's lost the way back to the castle. And the thing is, he also just wants to become a normal ghost again. He's become also, he turns also into, where am I getting at? He basically turns into a sad little ghost and no one can understand him, and he doesn't have his friend anymore.
PJ, what happens if he falls asleep, you know, after the hour and he's not gotten back home?
After the hour and he hasn't gone home, well, he just has to stay where he is. You see, he has to find a chest or somewhere. He usually falls asleep inside of suitcases or chests or drawers or like trunks. So he always tries to find a place.
Right.
And he doesn't want to but nothing can happen to him. He's a ghost. But at the same time, he just wants his peace again. So it's kind of, he just wants to be the normal ghost he was. And it's just about him trying to find his way back to that. And he meets some kids who start to help him. And really, the story is just a lovely, very short, you'd read it in a day, kid stories about a little ghost. And it's just the illustrations I love about it. And he's kind of like, here he's kind of just like crying.
Oh,
he just can't get back to his place. Now, the one thing he does have a set of keys that he holds on to, because he explains that if he didn't hold on to them, he would just fly off with the wind.
Right.
But these keys open up any door or lock that exists. So it's a key point in the story. And, you know, what I like about, and I'm going to talk about the next author, because funny enough, the two authors I'm talking about today used to be teachers, both of them.
Right.
Both men who started off the career as teachers. And I find it interesting because I'm a teacher too. And they've got the same story, the next author as well. Just teachers who started telling stories to the kids and eventually thought, yeah, okay, they seem to enjoy this. Maybe I should write stories so that more kids can read about my stories. So it's something very honorable. And I just love it. If you can find a copy, guys, have a look at The Little Ghost, Kleine Gespenst, by Ottfried Preußler. There he is.
Okay, there we go.
And beautiful illustration.
Nice.
Beautiful
illustration. Is this available in English?
In fact, Dean, you'd be delighted to know it says specifically in the 60s edition and what languages it was translated already. It must have been really popular because this was even translated into Basque.
Oh, wow.
As in like Basco. So like, also Norwegian and Slovenian. So, and including English, yes. So guys, might not be popular anymore that much, but lovely 60s book. Innocent kind of children's stories. Story, but still, he's a ghost, so it's not that kind of like everyday or mundane either.
Yeah, okay, good. Well,
check it out.
Before we hear about your second book, I'm going to do my second book. But before we do that, I think it's time to tell everyone to go to patreon.com/book.
If you want, because on... Yeah, because on patreon.com, you could potentially, for dinero, money, okane.
But not much get, money.
Well, not for a lot of more. If you want to pay a bit extra, you can see me doing laundry.
Ah, so
I'm
right.
I'm just saying. Yeah. But for a very little amount, you can also see Playboys.
Yeah, for like $3 and £3, you get Playboys. We've got all our Shakespeare's. We've got our.
When we say Playboys, we mean the theatrical version. We analyze theaters. Theater, darling.
Now, we're releasing the older episodes on our Books Boys feed for free, but why don't you go and get the full back catalog, all of our Shakespeare's, all of our other plays, we did some Spanish plays, we did some other plays from around the world. And now, of course, we're doing all the ancient Greek plays and all the comedies are already out. So why don't you go and check those out? Plus, you've got Dark Place Dreamers with myself and Robert. We reviewed Garth Marenghi's Dark Place and The Sandman. Mm. Then you've got a few other bits and pieces like Poetry Pals and Film Fellows and interviews from The Vault where I interviewed rock stars and all sorts of things. So go check that out. Nice. You get a t-shirt. Wait. You know.
Or even a special episode where you describe your trip to London, right?
And of course, speaking of t-shirts, if you go to booksboys.com, you can just buy a t-shirt on there as well. You can get the Anna Karenina Method. You can get Keep Calm and Read Your Dickens. You can get
Is This a Holiday?
Is This a Holiday? You can get that on a t-shirt. And we never find out if it was a holiday or not.
You know, I think every day is a holiday.
Hence home, you idle creatures.
Hence home. Great play, old JCA.
That's it. Well, oh yeah. So before I do my book, I'm talking about the Patreon. I'm supposed to supposed to play the jingle.
Supposed to sell it.
Supposed
to sell it.
Thing here. It's cheap though. Get it, guys.
The fact that we'll
is PJ.
Hello there.
Now, PJ, what have we learned about Shakespeare?
This is a holiday.
Hello.
Dark Place Robert and Playboy Alex.
Doing all right. Glad to be here again.
So I've given you those nicknames.
I'm not a fan of that one.
Well, that's where people will know you from. That's
Nobody's
why
going to know me from that one, but let's carry on anyway.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Join us for Shakespeare written. Spanish plays and poetry, rock star interviews, film reviews, Dark Place Dreamers, and more. Patreon.com/booksboys.
Get it, buy it, books. So, that's that. What else have I read? Well, I already gave you the breakdown at the beginning, but the next book that I'm going to talk about is the Tolstoy. This is the Cossacks, but Swerve. I'm not going to spend much time on the Cossacks.
And, to be fair, although we mentioned Tolstoy, every episode is the first episode where we actually review the Tolstoy. So,
yeah,
the Cossacks.
So, this is three books. This is actually three novellas. So the whole thing is only 330 pages, but it's split into three novellas. And the Cossacks is supposed to be the main one. It was probably my least favorite of the three. I will mention all three briefly, but I'm only really going to talk about one of them. Okay. So, I mean, the Cossacks itself, we've got this chap. This is set in Russia and everything, all three of these stories. But we've got this one chap, he goes to hang out with he's rich, and he's an army chap, but he goes to hang out with a bunch of Cossacks, and they're living in huts and things like that. He wants to live a more simple lifestyle, and they're kind of warriors. But essentially, look, it's just it's a sort of a love story, but the girl he likes is already sort of not unofficially engaged to another chap.
I've heard about the story a bit, yeah. And just to give a bit of hindsight as well, Tolstoy was young when he wrote this, and rich himself. I think he was he a count? I'm not quite sure.
Mm.
And so I think at the beginning of his career, he's already starting to change. He's already seeing with this money, it's not really bringing me much. How can I help the people? So he was actually a very generous sort of person who really became he became very Christian, but in a very, I suppose, in his own philosophical, which is
yeah, yeah.
In his own kind of after thinking about a lot. Anyway, but I'm just curious if that reflects while you tell the story. But please continue.
No, it does a little bit. It's more about, you know, forgetting the wealth never really brings you anything. And
yeah,
you know,
okay.
It's a bit more on helping people in community and that kind of thing, you know?
That's his big thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the main vibe. But I mean, he likes this one girl and he's not really going to be able to get with her. The girls go around and they flirt sometimes and things like that. And you got to pay them money for kisses and things like that. But really, she's probably going to end up with the other Cossack gentleman, you know? And I don't think that's really going anywhere for him. But he's almost content to just admire her beauty and to be in love from a distance for most of the novella.
Right, okay.
And then, you know, some things happen. One guy kills an enemy, and then some enemies are going to come, and they talk to them and things. Honestly, not a lot happens. It is more just showing you a bit of the Cossack lifestyle, and you know, and this one guy. So not a massive amount happens. I found it quite slow, and I was just kind of skimming through it. The other one is the death of Ivan Ilyich.
This is a chap who,
I mean, initially we hear that he's dying. And most of his friends and most people who know him are immediately thinking, how does this benefit me? Like, if he dies, then will I get the promotion that he has? Or, you know, this kind of stuff. And this is just the story of him dying and his final time on Earth. Mm. And his family aren't even that bothered. He's a bit of a hindrance to his wife. He can't get out of bed. He's, you know, he's getting all frail and he's losing his looks. He's becoming ugly.
Isn't he though like a lawyer kind of worked too much and kind of didn't live his life?
He really overworked and focused too much on work, and he's quite high up in like government postings even, I think. But it's more just like his daughter doesn't really care about him. Him and his wife don't like each other, so it's kind of sad, to be honest. But it's the shortest of the three, and it is just a glimpse into someone's last days, essentially. And he has to reflect on whether or not he really spent his life well, or was his entire existence kind of trite and meaningless.
Oh. Wow.
But the one I liked, you know, and this will shock you, DJ, it's called Happy Ever After. And this one is a romance.
Ah, well, there you go. Surprise right there. So tell me about this. Happy Ever After. Is it a Happy Ever After?
No.
Well, I suppose it can't be.
It is not. So,
yeah, what I thought, that's Told Story and Humor, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've got this nice Russian family, and they've got a friend who comes to visit, and the mother says, in a passing comment, the mother says something like, this guy is the kind of, to her daughter, you know, this is the kind of guy that you should marry one day. And for some reason, just that sticks with the daughter, and she decides, I have to marry this friend of dad's. And this guy is like in his mid-30s and she's 17. Like, he is more than double her age.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
And dad dies. And then she's like, you know, I didn't even like this friend of his. He's kind of old and melancholy. And, you know, I'm just going to marry him anyway because that's what I'm supposed to do. So they hang out a little bit. And he comes in and he takes on a fatherly role. And he instructs her in her piano playing and says, you know, oh, that bit wasn't good enough, but that bit was fine. And she can't believe that he cares enough about her to even tell her that she's not good enough. You know, this kind of thing,
ridiculous.
You know.
Yeah, this sounds like the story again you mentioned where the Le Fanu, I think, novel, right, where she's basically putting her head on her dad's lap and just pretend that he's theirs.
It's more of that, you know. But
it's ridiculous.
Honestly, the guy turns out to be a good guy.
Okay.
And the girl is actually the character I don't like.
Oh, okay.
So she starts out full of romantic notions. You know, initially, the book's trying to tell you, forget about the person you grew up kind of fantasizing about, you know, your ideal person. Go with someone different, this melancholy guy. And she wants to marry him, and he likes her, but he won't display any affection, and he can be cold to her. And then when it comes to a head and they talk about it, and she asks him, look, what's actually happening here? And he makes up this thinly veiled story. He's like, well, what if a particular gentleman, let's call him B, likes a particular girl, let's call her A, who's a family friend and much younger than him. It just describes their exact circumstances. It's very, very thinly veiled pseudonyms. And eventually he's like, you know, so what's going to happen? Either she's just making fun of me because I'm way too old for her, or we get together and it's terrible. And then she says, well, there's a third ending. What if it's all good? And so he says, well, I'm leaving you forever. Goodbye. And she says, no, don't leave me forever. What if we're in love? And he's like, okay, let's get married in like 2 days. Done. That's the persuasion. It's all done. But what? he does, before that, he does try to say to her, I don't think it will work. I'm too old. I mean, he's like 36. He's like, I want, a slow lifestyle. I want to sit by the fire. You know, you want to go to Petersburg. You want to have a big society girl type lifestyle. And she says, no, I'm content to go to your farm. It'll all be good. And of course, he was right all along. So they go there. And after a couple of months of insane, passionate love.
Well, at least they had that, for God's sake. I mean, isn't that something?
Spent under the roof of the mother-in-law. His mother, who's this really strict lady, and, you know, they're just kind of tiptoeing around her, but then they enjoy their mornings and their evenings together, you know.
Is it quite graphic? Is it quite graphic, I suppose?
No, it's not really graphic, but it's just funny because the mother-in-law is very... So she's called Katya and he's called Sergey, by the way. I should give their names. The mother-in-law's very strict, and she's just very old school, you know, but they just kind of tiptoe around her, and they have their nice mornings and their nice evenings together and everything like that. Then what happens is she gets bored. She's a terrible person. So she starts saying, well, I'm bored. What if I just cause drama? What if I just cause my husband like emotional drama and turmoil in order to amuse myself? You know, what if I'm just causing problems and, you know, she's just a terrible, terrible girl. So then he eventually says, okay, you need to go to the capital. You need to go into society. That will liven things up. The farm is too boring for you, but I did warn you about that. And so they go into society, and of course she's going to parties and balls. She's flirting with other men. A guy even kisses her at one point, and they drift further and further apart. And he puts up with a lifestyle he doesn't like in the city, until eventually it all comes to a head, and he says, you know, I'm going back to the farm. They're so far apart, they don't even speak most days anymore, you know, after the months of intense passion that they had.
Which reminds me of, as I said, reminds me of Anna Karenina in the sense of the farm passages there for peace,
But they forgot, this is only 100 pages, they forgot to put in the 500-page farming manual.
Oh, no, okay, that's a pity. So he didn't develop his own method quite yet, own Anna Karenina method. There's an earlier book, isn't it, than Anna Karenina? Is this
I think so.
Okay.
So essentially it's just this bit of a story about their life, you know, and things are going wrong. And it's about changes in love. It's about the initial connection they had. Then it's about the intense passion that they have. And they have a child as well. And she doesn't even like the child. She's like, I don't like this infant that's in my house now. Like, I just want to go to parties and, go around in pretty clothes and things like that.
She didn't live her youth, didn't she? That's her problem.
Exactly. He regains a second happiness by giving all the love he had for her to the child now.
Okay.
And, you know, essentially what happens is she figures out that she messed everything up. And she says, and then it gets a bit sexist, and she says, why didn't you use the power that you have over me? Why didn't you forbid me to go to society? Why didn't you beat me? Why didn't you kill me? And because I ruined everything, and I wanted to go back to the way it was. And he says, you had to find that out for yourself. I could never have controlled you. You had to learn from your mistakes. But it can never go back to the way it was. It's done. It's broken. And now we have a different kind of love, where we just kind of live in the same place and tolerate each other, but the passion will never come back. And the conclusion, the girl is the one who's actually writing the book. And the conclusion is, and we lived happily ever after, but we never ever regained our former passion. We just kind of existed together in the same dwelling. And at 25 years old, by the end of the book, she just resigns herself to this life of nothingness.
25? Okay, that's what you're mentioning at the beginning. I don't know. I just find what's going on. You know, like I'm just thinking, can we not just be happy? Can the man not just be happy with having found love at the first place? And can the woman also not decide, like, okay, we had this, but if I'm not that happy with them, I won't stay with them. Just, I don't know.
Well, dude,
I'm not sure if that sounds like
in the 19th century that was unthinkable.
Yeah, I suppose so. Different times, but
you'd go around creating problems for yourself and moral lessons. You know.
What I find interesting is that he was a really popular writer at the time, so people were reading this. Obviously, so what I find interesting about classics, at least, even though they seem often outdated, or at least the best classics don't, but some classics seem outdated. But at the time, it reflects the society at the time. So it can learn something about the society at the time. It must have been a big thing. It must have been a very repressed, unhappy society, Russia at the time. That's all I'm getting at, really. Yeah.
But what's interesting is...
Or Victorian England.
You read books from this time period. It doesn't matter if they're set in Russia, in England, in France, in Spain. They're all very similar.
Yeah, I mean, you're not like a happy kind of 19th century book.
And we're about to cover one in America, again, similar.
Oh, yeah.
So,
okay.
But do you want to take your turn?
Yes, to talk about something set in the 20th century, even though it's quite at the end, 20th century. I mentioned the teacher turned author from Germany. Now I'm going to mention another teacher-turned-author. I'm talking about the unique Michael Moore Purgo, who is better known as the author of War Horse, which was turned into a Spielberg film.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't read that book. Love to try it out one day.
I've never read it. I've heard of it.
No, I've heard of it. Yeah, I've heard it. That's supposed to be great. But to be honest, it was more... I think it was the cover and the plot, which is not something I usually go for necessarily. I often go for the author or like maybe what I heard about the author. But I find this cover very intriguing.
It's an interesting cover. I see it there.
It's a slightly abstract, but it's a ship here and there is a dog and a boy at either side just falling off the ship. And yeah, and it's a bit based on Hokusai and Japanese paintings. Because it's called Kensuke's Kingdom. And it's a book that's about a boy called Michael, just like the author, whose parents in England lose all their money. And instead of like trying for the next job, the dad decides, well, look, we all enjoy sailing. I bought this boat called Peggy Sue. Let's travel the world.
Why not? It's a good idea.
And that's just the way it begins. And so they travel the world. Why not? It's got a map here as well where they went. They traveled from England down to the Azores and to lovely Canary Islands, Cape Verde Islands. And then
they get down to your neck of the woods.
Oh, they get down there and then they move on, Brazil, and they see a lot of different places. And at the beginning, it's all just kind of like a journal. He's having a nice time. However, you do know from the beginning, the very opening line is chapter one, Peggy Sue. I disappeared on the night before my 12th birthday, July the 28th, 1988. Only now can I at last tell the whole extraordinary story, the true story. Kensuke made me promise that I would say nothing, nothing at all, until at least 10 years had passed. So we already know that he's going to disappear.
Wait, did you say the character is called Peggy Sue?
The boat is called Peggy Sue.
Oh, the boat. So the boat is named after the Buddy Holly song?
I think so, yes.
Okay, that's interesting. If you knew Peggy Sue, then you'd know why I feel blue without Peggy, Peggy Sue.
Oh, okay, so that's what it's called after. And, well, anyway, the boy, they travel around the world, and all goes well. I mean, it's a bit difficult sailing. He and his parents, they study it, and they manage. And then after a couple of storms, when they're getting close to after Australia, they're somewhere between Australia and Japan. It's very vague where they are, actually. Just somewhere in the Pacific. And it's not even a storm, but it's just that during the night, his dog, Michael's dog, goes out and she doesn't have her harness on. She doesn't have like her safety vest on. And Michael's just worried. And he goes to look for her, grabs her because she didn't stop barking for some reason. And then they both just slip off into the sea at night. And the boat drifts off. And so everything goes so fast that his screams can't even be heard because his parents are sleeping at the bottom of the boat. And he's drowning, but then someone saves him. And he wakes up on an island. And it's a bit here at the back, kind of a picture. On an island shaped like a peanut. And he's just wondering how he got there. He's with his dog, but his parents are not there. And it turns out a man, a former Japanese doctor from the Second World War, saved him and is now even providing food for him and won't talk to him. And this guy is called Kensuke. And there is a connection between the Second World War from the Japanese side and him being on this island ever since. So he's in the 70s already, living with orangutans. And yeah, it's basically just this friendship that forms between them. I suppose Robinson Crusoe and Friday-esque figure, especially because Kensuke only speaks really broken English, which I actually love. I find that the most poetical part of the book whenever he speaks
really?
Broken English. Yeah, I love that because it's the broken English inside. He does express himself very well, but I find, all right, but it's kind of my interest at the moment of becoming minimalist. He's expressing himself using only like 30 words or whatever.
Okay, fair enough. Have you ever read Robinson Crusoe, by the way?
You know, I have. I loved it.
You have? I never read it.
Did not like the last chapter. I thought, why did he write that?
It's a bit,
yeah. There's a chapter. I don't think most people know the real end from Robinson Crusoe. They think it just kind of, yeah. Anyway, novel itself before that is really good. I really recommend it. It's
I didn't like Gulliver's Travels, and that put me off that kind of
stuff. No, but Robinson Crusoe is kind of very metaphysical, I find, as well, and not really a typical kind of story of that era, I think.
Okay.
And in a sense, this is the same here, Friday and Robinson Crusoe relationship, but deeper, I suppose, and... It's also, we don't know much about Kensuke because he doesn't speak much in general, even in Japanese. He's in words. He hasn't spoken really since the Second World War. Imagine it. This is set in the 1980s. So I won't say more than that. It's a very short novel, again, written for teenagers, essentially. I have to say, the last chapter or two really almost had me in tears. And
oh, no.
Especially the penultimate chapter called The Night of the Turtles, where turtles are born on the island and they do things to protect the turtles. It's really, and Michael Morpurgo is more of like a kind of a Green Party. He's a UK writer, but he's very much in the Green Party kind of orientated. And he's the one I mentioned at the beginning of the episode who, in this book, he says he uses sustainable paper from forests that are well managed and controlled. And there's a tiny essay at the end. There's even a tiny environmental essay at the end. That's how dedicated he is. And I have to say, the whole story itself is quite environmental. Kensuke really, his kingdom is this island. He basically protects the animals on his island because there are also kind of, you know, unconscious fishermen trying to kill the animals as well. There's a bit of a dangerous side as well. It's not just living in paradise.
But this is really? These are good messages for the kids, you know?
Oh, right. Like, that's what I'm saying. So reading both these books, Kleine Gespenst, which is really just, for me, it's like this light living kind of feeling with this environmental message. It's the kind of books I am enjoying reading at the moment because it is the kind of books that I'm interested in writing. I would say the book I just wrote was very environmental and I can only learn from people like Morpurgo. And he said himself, I was listening to an interview, he said himself that he was just reading out to the kids and they got bored with the stories that he was reading out. So he started inventing his own stories and they were more interested. And he explained it wasn't because his stories they were better. They just said he meant every word he said. And that really inspired me. And also the environmental message of this book. And yeah, I just think it's amazing. It's lovely. Oh, and he gets into painting as well, Dean, which you enjoy.
Good.
Big pass about that. So I highly recommend it. Kensuke's Kingdom by Morpurgo. Lovely, lovely edition, by the way. Really like this. Really lovely and colorful. It's also got lovely illustrations. I just showed you one, didn't I? I'll show you another one. An inside illustration, like here, for example, you got like...
Nice.
Yeah, you got the two individuals just like... bonding here as well.
It's a very different illustration style to the previous book, but still yeah.
And you know what I love about this? I do love writing about Second World War as well, and kind of like because I grew up with on the German side. On my German side, really, my grandparents were my granddad's. Well, not many people knows, but he had to fight for the Nazis, aged 18, and he hated it. He shot himself in the leg to get away from it and be captured by UK soldiers. He hated it. And my grandmother, she was only a teenager in the Second World War, and, you know, terrible things happened to her classmates, and she just managed to flee. And it's just like these terrible visual stories and also poignance. And I love then when someone, I love when someone takes a modern story that is somehow linked to the Second World War. And you know, I've showed you my writing, Dean, was the Okatama Express. The Okatama Express, it has that. It
still
has
got
that
my Second still got my draft War. Copy sitting on the shelf over there.
Well, I'm glad you have it. And it's got the Second World story, especially in the Japanese side. I mean, the Japanese, German stories, they're insane stuff. So I really enjoyed his background story, which obviously it, you're, you know it's going to happen. And so it's not really a spoiler, but you're looking forward to it. So at the end, he does learn more English and he opens up and he does tell why he is actually there. So I was always looking forward to that part. And then I really did enjoy it when it came.
Good.
So if you want to know, you know, and it's not very, what am I saying? It's not very kind of like teachy preachy. It's just a story and you are learning a bit about the history, in this case of Japan, and also about the environment, but just perfect for kids. It's not like a lecture. It's just, oh yeah, true, an interesting story. So, so you see the teacher really in both sides a bit here. So they're two similar authors in some sense, teachers who are educating their children kind of like, maybe like, no, not in your face, just kind of how can I teach without them even realizing, you know? That as a teacher, find interesting too.
Good. So you check it out. Books. And I should say, it's interesting. Go ahead.
No, I just want to mention, I think it's being turned into a film this year or next year. Kenskis Kingdom, I think it was Cillian Murphy as well. So it's probably going to be another big film. Maybe you want to read it now before it even comes out. So Kenskis Kingdom, more Purgo. But sorry, you were saying anything?
No, I was just going to say, it sounds like you had two good books. And, you know, interestingly, yeah, I enjoyed all the books I read this month. So we had a...
Well, that's good.
They weren't necessarily my overall favorites, but I think overall we've had a pretty, pretty decent collection this month. So very good.
Nice. Nice.
And I mentioned to you before the show, I'm starting next month with a 900-page book in Spanish about ancient Greece. And it's called the assassination, technically, the death of Plato. But, you know, he wasn't assassinated. So what I really love to do is read a 900-page book in a foreign language about an event that never happened. That's fantastic for me. You know?
And it's a sequel of the assassination of Socrates, right, from the same author.
Yes, which makes more sense, and which I think I've recommended that one before.
Indeed, but Plato, I'm not sure, you know, what's going on there? The next will be like the assassination of Immanuel Kant. And then series 34, the assassination of you know, Martin Heidegger. How, where does it stop? Like Soren Kierkegaard.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway, have fun. But now tell me this, Dean. Your patience is unbelievable. Are you going to continue reading it if you don't like it after page two? Because you have read books that you didn't like after
probably
page two.
Will, and I liked the first one, so I guess I like the second one. The style was good and engaging, and I liked the subject matter. So yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
I believe I picked it up when I was in when I did my Gibraltar visit, and then I also visited Malaga and Marbella and things somewhere along that trip. I think I picked this one up. So
hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.